tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We have Senator Daniel Biss with Hannah Cardin, who is the pastor for Urban Village Church's Wicker Park site. We also have Senator Cullerton coming on, as well as Dr. Dingman at 105. And now, live from Springfield, but streaming through your radio at AM 720, here is Patty Vasquez.
Oh man, happy Wednesday, everybody. I am broadcasting from Springfield, Illinois. It's been a wild day. I don't want to say there's a lot going on in Springfield, because the most important thing that needs to happen in our state is a budget. But there was some legislation that was bandied about, and there are a couple things that were, I don't know if this is amusing, because there's so many horrible things that are going on, that there are some agencies that provide crucial services that are not being paid. And at the same time, there's a weirdness. Esmeralda, I need to bring you down here sometime, because I don't know if it would be better or worse for you to get an idea of what it's like. I don't know if it would make you angry or chagrined.
Probably angrier. Like I said, I'm afraid that if I'm in the round or wherever, I would just start yelling.
Well, you know we talked earlier about how there was a woman who's been arrested and found guilty of laughing during the confirmation hearings for Attorney General Sessions. Did we talk about that? She laughed.
I had heard about it, but I'm not sure if we talked about it. But yeah, see, I don't need to go to jail.
Well, she was convicted because it was a disruption, and they accused her of trying to sway the congressmen who were having the confirmation hearings, and that her outburst. She was also a protester. But so I'm not a protester. I'm in the press. And I was in the press room today. And I don't know. I'm often with the press corps here. And there are people who are, they're journalists. And they have, and I watch them, and I watch them ask questions. It was with President Cullerton. And there had been some movement on the grand bargain. And this is, by the way, for people who are joining us and are not familiar, perhaps you're driving around the country. Maybe you're in Georgia, or you're in Iowa, and you're like, what's going on in Illinois? We are at a budget impasse. We are going into it's 2 years, but it's a third session where they've not been able to find an agreement on the budget. And part of that is because Governor Rauner, as part of his promises when he ran for office, was that he would turn around the state, that he would either work with Speaker Madigan or push through things. He'd be able to make I don't even really know what the real overall statement was, but what he has proposed is that if we're going to pass a budget, these are the things he wants changed in the state of Illinois. He tried to make the state of Illinois, one of them was he wanted to make the state of Illinois a right to work state, which really ekes away at the union rights. He also wanted to sort of tailor or circumvent some of the bargaining rights. There's workman's comp. When there was movement to raise the minimum wage, he said maybe we'll raise it to by like 15 cents by 2020. I can't remember the exact number, but it was small compared to what the original plans had been for the state of Illinois. So this is part of the reason why we are at our impasse, is that he proposed a budget that was $4 billion out of whack, meaning that these are the things that he wanted to spend on, but there was nothing to pay for them. There was a gap of $4 billion, and that was in 2015. The legislature, the House of Representatives, also passed a budget, and they've been going back and forth. He had the opportunity to go through and decide things line by line. We shouldn't spend on this. We should cut that. Those kinds of things. A spending budget. A budget really is a spending budget, and there has to be revenue. There has to be a balance. So we are now more than 2 years into this, and the items that he wanted, he's holding the budget, basically saying, look, I will take a look at this budget if you make adjustments on workman's comp, if there's this element of causation that the Republicans and the Democrats go back and forth on. There is the idea of the cost of living wage, a lot of things, the payment of the pensions. There are so many things tied up that actually have nothing to do with the budget. And I understand where people are like, well, we should fix those things so that we aren't in the situation later down the road. But what I can see is there are people who are fighting to protect workers' rights in the state of Illinois. But fine, then there are ways to find a compromise. If this is what it's going to take, if we have to argue over these elements of the way business is practiced in the state of Illinois, okay, we'll take a look at this. So the Senate, since January, has said, all right, let's sit down at the table, Republicans and Democrats, let's go over this. And that came to a halt. They tried starting it again, and they've gone back and forth. Now, there are 13 elements that are in what's called the grand bargain that have nothing to do with our budget. Parts of those are it's gaming revenue. It is the consolidation of municipalities. There are property tax freeze temporary that would last for 2 years. There are 13 parts to it. And so finally, today seemed like it was going to be the day, Esmeralda and everybody, it was going to be the day where the president of the Senate was going to stand on the floor of the Senate and say, okay, this is the agreement the Democrats and Republicans have come to. This is what we've worked on. And then there was a conversation back and forth. The minority House leader, Senator Redonio, stood and said that there were two things that they needed to pull. They pulled from the record two elements. One of them was the temporary property tax freeze and the workman's comp agreement. And she wanted those pulled from the record because she didn't feel that it was where they wanted them to be, even though it seemed as though this is the agreement. So anyway, as my long story short about laughing, President Cullerton immediately walked down, and I, you know, not really being in the press, I got to follow. I pretty much follow everybody else. I'm like, where's everybody going? Oh, we're going to the press room. And he was hot under the collar. He was talking about how long they worked on this for 71 days. They felt like they got into a place where everyone was in agreement. And there were questions back and forth. He was answering everything. He said, you know, I don't know how much farther we can go. When the unions don't like this and the trial attorneys don't like our workman's comp, you know that this is something that Democrats didn't want to do in the first place. I don't know how many more votes I can get. And he got one more question. It was toward the end. And I was, you know, taking notes. I'm tap, tap, tap on my keyboard, trying to look busy, take some pictures. And then he said, well, I'm going to go talk to the governor. And Esmeralda, I laughed so hard. I don't know what happened, but I just started.
Can he do that?
Can he go?
Like, I'm going to go talk to him.
Well, and I didn't know, like, I don't. So the next thing that happened was, I'm going now. So I don't know if he left because he really was going to talk to the governor or because of the outburst of laughter in the press room from the unknown person in the back of the room. Because I don't know if he meant, he'd been taking questions for about 20 minutes. He had, and so that leads me to my next point. So I wanted to know, like, the press corps was like, do you think he's really going to do it? And I said, well, let's follow him. So I went to the governor's office, which is on the second floor of the state capitol. I mean, that seems reasonable, right? As the press corps, you just go into the governor's office. Shouldn't I be able to go?
Sure.
Nothing.
Is there like someone in between?
It's a massive, like there's an entrance and there's this like massive reception area.
Right. I would assume that you just can't knock and be like, hey
what
Robbie.
You up to? Hey, what? Yeah. So I went in and there's a receptionist there and I didn't see the president of the Senate. And I thought, well, as long as I'm here, and I mean, I spoke to the speaker yesterday and I know that Governor Rauner talks to WGN radio. I thought I would put in a request for an interview. That seems reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I talked to his assistant, and she was very sweet. I said, hi, I'd like to request an interview with Governor Rauner. And she said, I said, I'm with WGN Radio. And she was looking at her screen, and she goes, what organization are you with? And I said, I'm with WGN Radio. And she goes, okay, you need to put in a request. And she turns her computer screen toward me, and she goes, I'm going to show you how to get to the website. And she starts typing in illinois.gov, and it's how you put in a request. Like, anybody can put in a request to meet with. She goes, scroll down to the bottom of your screen. It says, see where it says contact us? And I said, I'm standing right here, though. I'm contacting you.
Right. Said, I mean, is she the one who makes, you know, sets up these appointments?
I don't know.
It's kind of like, I know there's a Ticketmaster website, but I'm at the box office, so I might as well just buy a ticket now.
I'm saying yes. Yeah. So that was my day. That's kind of what there was a moment where I'm like, well, I don't see what, I mean, can I tell you the truth? I did this 4 years ago. I did kind of the same thing. And within about 5 hours, I met with Governor Quinn. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio South. I am in the basement of our state capital of Illinois in Springfield. Joining us on the line, also in Springfield, not in the basement, is Senator Daniel Biss. How are you doing, Senator? Senator? Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. We can all hear each other right now. What's happening?
It's a wonderful thing. I don't know what I saw today. I came in. I was told there would be some fast movement on the grand bargain, and then I don't know what. Did I see an implosion? Because I feel like I saw. Was it an explosion? An implosion? What happened?
I don't really have a clear answer to that question. There was some, like, a certain amount of sort of talking back and forth. There was, a single bill passed, and then a couple other bills didn't get called for votes, and then everybody went home again.
Right.
The bottom line is that it's now more than 22 months that we've not had a budget, and we didn't pass a budget today, and we didn't make progress toward passing a budget today, and the people of Illinois are still hurting. In fact, they're hurting more today than they were yesterday because of what the legislature and especially Governor Rauner has failed to do. And it's time for us to sit down and figure out how to enact a budget that actually works for people. And it's way past time. But if we haven't done it till now, at least let us finally do it now.
Yeah, I can't wrap my mind around it. We spoke to Speaker Madigan yesterday, and a lot of what he had to say was that, this is a governor who wants these items, whether it's workman's comp or bargaining rights or, the property tax freeze, which would, disproportionately hurt different school districts. Okay, so the speaker and the governor are far apart. President Cullerton seemed really hot under the collar today. I just don't see any way that this works out. I mean, it seems as though it's really, I don't know how it's not, at this point, I don't know how it's not Governor Rauner, because I don't know what it is.
I mean, if you're asking whether Governor Rauner is a failed governor, he is. If you're asking whether he's failed to lead and failed to solve the problems the state needs solved, then he has. The question that I ask myself as a legislator is, what can I do to move us toward a solution, given the fact that we have a governor who's a failure and given the fact that he has refused to do his constitutionally mandated job of introducing a balanced budget, that he for some reason refuses to sit down and talk about the budget? How can I try to move us toward solutions? And it's not easy, but I think all of us have that responsibility, because the pain that people are undergoing in Illinois is simply unacceptable and cannot be allowed to continue.
A lot of people talk about how, this is something that the Speaker of the House has all of this power. He's really the one that's put his thumb on the scales here. He's the one that's holding all of this back. But I've been watching from the press box, and I've been watching the arguments back and forth, and I always feel like today I felt like, oh, here we go. The president of the Senate is going to, put this grand bargain out, then let the House deal with it. And it didn't even make it out of the House because of, was it two elements? It was the temporary property tax freeze and the workman's comp?
Yeah, those were the parts that Christine Rodonio, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, decided not to call. They're her bills. She gets to decide whether we have a vote or not, and she decided not to. And so those didn't get called, and the bills didn't move out of the Senate. And look, I mean, obviously Speaker Madigan is very powerful. I've said for a long time he's too powerful, and he still is, in my opinion. But let's just remember, he's not a magician, and we have to all find a way to work together to actually solve these problems. And, what Governor Rauner has chosen to do is not to say, hey, man, Speaker Madigan's too powerful, and I don't always agree with him, so that's frustrating, but we're going to try to solve something. Instead, he says, Speaker Madigan is a monster, therefore I don't even have to try. And that's what I find so repulsive. Do your job, make an effort, try your best, and let's all do what we can to find a way to work together on behalf of the people we're serving, even if we disagree about a bunch of stuff, even if we don't necessarily like each other, even if we're political adversaries. Doesn't matter. Let's get together and get the job done.
I've been trying to do some research on what are the elements that are, aside from everything we're grappling with right now. People talk about the pension problems and, we haven't paid our obligations and things like that. Is there a way, and I asked Speaker Madigan this yesterday, is there a way to modernize the Illinois tax system? Because you've talked a lot about how the millionaires and billionaires are not are not paying their portion of this. And it seems as though since 1970, when the flat tax was instituted, became part of our Constitution, when, you know, the inequality between the rich and the poor was much closer than it is now. The top 1% seems to have grown so much, been able to grow so much faster when we've lost manufacturing jobs, when we've, you know, really fallen behind in a lot of other ways and not been able to capture that. Is there a way to catch up at all in the state?
You bet. And understand, Patty, that we are an unusual state in terms of how we do this. And so when I say that we don't tax millionaires and billionaires enough, I mean that just compared to other states. We are, I think, the fourth or fifth most regressive tax state in the union. That means that we tax the middle class too much. We tax the working poor too much. We tax the richest residents, those who have been the beneficiaries of all that economic growth for decades. We don't tax them enough. And so we can fix that. That part of that's in our Constitution, like you said. If we amended our Constitution, which right now there's only four states that have a Constitution that says you cannot tax someone making $20 million a year at a higher rate than someone making $20,000 a year. We're one of just four states to say that. If we got rid of that and allowed ourselves to have a tax code that says, listen, if you're a millionaire or a billionaire, we're going to ask you to pay a higher rate because guess what? You're able to do it. If we could make that one change, put us in line with most other states, we could finally have a fair tax system that doesn't overburden the middle class, that doesn't overburden the working poor, and that enables us to bring in the revenue needed to make government work.
Who are the other three states?
Michigan, which also, you know, pretty seriously fiscally troubled state, to say the uh-huh. least. Pennsylvania, which was the second to last state last year to get a budget. So they also had a huge amount of trouble balancing their budget because they're not able to ask millionaires and billionaires to pay their share. And then Massachusetts, which is, you know, they're in decent condition, but they also have a lot of inequality over there.
It is it's a lot to grapple with, and I thank you so much for the hard work you're doing. May I ask you this? I know that you represent the areas of Evanston and parts of Skokie, correct?
That's right, and then parts of nine other communities.
And how's the response been to everything that's going on? I'm imagining that people are fairly frustrated.
Well, Patty, it's an understatement. People are just disgusted, and they see that we have a state government that's failing all of us, and they might send their children to public school and wonder if the state's going to get to a place where it can't even support schools in the way that's necessary. They see that as their kids are juniors in high school and are beginning to contemplate college, that the public community colleges and universities in Illinois are all of a sudden being underfunded and harmed in a terrible way by the state government. And they wonder, gosh, should I be encouraging my kids to go to those institutions? And they also see that we're racking up $11 million of debt every single day,
right.
And they wonder when it's going to stop. And so there's a lot of frustration, and there's a lot of hunger for something different. And I just think that we need to do better for all of our constituents, and we can't get used to this kind of system, which is hurting people across the state. We can't get to a place where we call that the status quo. We need to be willing to be bold, be ambitious, and transform our government, take it back on behalf of all of us so that we can finally start to serve the people.
Well, before I let you go, I know, how many kids do you have? I forget. I apologize.
I'm not offended at all, and neither are they, I think. I have two boys, a 7-year-old called Theodore and an 8-year-old called Elliot. They're in first and third grade.
Oh, man. And this has to be so strange when you come home from Springfield and you're like, all these families, all the people of Illinois that you're fighting for. And ultimately, it must be when you come home, you're like, I'm really trying to make this better. Is that kind of the feeling you get when you come home from a week in Springfield?
It is. You know, our guys grew up in the legislature. When I was first elected, you know, Theodore wasn't even one yet. No, it was still 2.5. And so they come to Springfield and they watch the debates, and we talk about what I try to do here. We talk about the fact that the decisions that I'm making in Springfield are part of all of our community coming together and trying to make things better. And they go to school and they know that our society needs roads, and they see that some people are treated unfairly, and they're just kind of curious about what it's going to take for us to make things better for people. And, you know, it's funny. You can talk to a grown-up or a seven-year-old, and you use maybe a little bit different vocabulary, but I think the basic ideas of cooperation and people helping each other are ideas that are universal.
Well, maybe you need to use that vocabulary when you're on the floor of the Senate, because I don't know what it's going to take. Thank you so much, Senator Biss. We appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, Daddy. I'll see you.
I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you so much. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting from our Illinois State Capitol. I'm in the basement in Springfield. This is a strange experience, and there's so many great things happening all over. And I know that for Mother's Day, I'm celebrating by taking my mom out on Friday night. And there's a lot of different ways to celebrate Mother's Day, but there's a wonderful time to thank your mom and dad for all the work that they do to make other people's lives better and share family moments together. Joining us on the line is our friend friend Hannah Carden, who is the pastor at Urban Village Church in Wicker Park. She's got a great new project for Mother's Day. Hey, Hannah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm reading this and I almost started crying because this is such a wonderful idea. You know, every year for Mother's and Father's Day, it's wonderful for a lot of people to thank their moms and dads. But there are two things. There are some people who maybe are estranged from a parent for whatever reason, or they've lost a parent. And I love what you are doing for people. Can you explain a little bit about this wonderful event?
Yeah, you got it exactly right, Patty. For a lot of us, Mother's Day is this beautiful time to thank mother figures in our lives or spend time with them. But then there are also a lot of us who've lost our moms, or some folks had abusive moms, or as is the case at our church, because we're LGBTQ affirming, there are lots of people whose moms can't or won't see them for who they are, which is someone who is beloved and wonderful just as they are. And so we set up this phone line at our number, 312-268-5300, where from 10 a.m. through the late afternoon on Sunday, we have affirming, loving moms ready and waiting, where if you want to call and thank them for being the kind of mom who loves everyone, or if you just want like a word of encouragement or strength from somebody, because that's not a thing that you can get this Sunday, you can get that here.
And how long have you been doing this event on Mother's Day and Father's Day?
This is the first time. It's an experiment. Last year, a gentleman in our community, Ty McCarthy, I want to give him all the credit, his mom, Marcia Fall, said to him that morning, you know, honey, I know there are some folks in your church who this is a rough day for them. Give out my cell phone number to everybody. And so in the middle of worship, he shared with everybody her cell phone number, and she was willing to take calls or texts all day. And I just thought that was so moving. It was such a sweet, kind, loving gesture. I thought, well, let's see what happens if we expand on that a little bit. So we're trying this out for the first time and seeing what it means to people.
And I'm fascinated by this, and I think this has to be really fulfilling for not just the people who need that voice of comfort, but I'm guessing there are some parents, some moms and dads out there who need this as well, aren't there?
I think so. Well, and you know, we felt a little divided at first because we thought, well, this is a day to thank and honor parents. Do we really want to ask them to do something on that day? Is that unfair? Ask them to staff this line. But I do think there are a lot of parents who they know what it is to have those tough relationships, but they also see their kids' friends or see other adults or people who don't get what they believe every person deserves, which is unconditional love. And it's meaningful to them and powerful to them to be able to offer just a word of that or a moment of that to someone who might not have access to it elsewhere.
I think it makes complete sense. And I would actually like to, what are the hours? Because I would love to volunteer if you're still looking for people to answer the phones.
Hey, well, let's talk because we have a couple hours in the afternoon. So
okay.
If you want to, we can talk. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, because I've talked to people who, I mean, there are certain holidays for people that actually, I mean, there's almost a sense of, I hate to say bitterness or resentment, whether it's Thanksgiving or, you know, something that you know, the holidays can be a trigger for people. But Mother's Day and Father's Day, if you've lost somebody or you were in a relationship where that person that, you know, that everybody else is celebrating wasn't quite, you know, was for whatever reason, like you mentioned, and there could even be, there are people who suffered from, you know, abuse as children, and they can't, mm-hmm. you know, they never had that connection. And I think this is a great way to, you know, when everybody else is celebrating, is go, hey, I just need to talk for a minute.
Yeah. Well, and they can be days where you just feel surrounded by, you know, TV and the culture and everyone around you is acting as if everybody has this
yes.
one type of perfect, happy family.
Right.
But we all have really different kinds of families that are made up of different kinds of folks. That's, you know, we've also been really careful to use this language of like mother figures and parental figures. We've all had really different experiences, but where I think we can come together is that we really need love from each other. And we really need to hear that from one another more often. And so we're trying to turn this, rather than one more day where you feel different from everybody else, into one more day where we can offer love to each other in a new way.
I mean, because it does seem, and I know that you you sent us some information, and a lot of this also has to do with how much families are changing today. They don't, you know, there isn't that same sort of, you know, there's not a formula when it comes to families, is there?
That's right. And I think that's a beautiful, freeing thing that so many of us, whether we are gay or straight, cis or trans, whether we choose to be, right, like a single mom by choice, or that wasn't the plan, but that's how it's ended up. There are a lot of kinds of families now, and all of them are beautiful and all of them are honored, but we don't necessarily like see that or feel that. And so we want to give people an opportunity to connect in whatever kind of family they find themselves, whether that's been fulfilling or not fulfilling, to find a new way of, I think, building new families, which is what we as a church try to do all year long.
Well, yeah. Speaking of your church, tell us a little bit about your church. I know that you're fairly young as a church, the Urban Village Church.
Yeah. We're about 7 years old, so it's an exciting time to be a church in Chicago. We are multi-site, so we're in Edgewater, South Loop, Hyde Park, Woodlawn, and Wicker Park. And we are committed to being LGBTQ affirming and multicultural, as well as boldly rooted in the gospel of a Jesus Christ who made all people and loves all people. So it's an exciting place to spend a Sunday.
That's a lot you're saying about the Bible and being all welcoming. I've heard so many different interpretations. And here's the thing. So I'm reading a little bit about you guys, whether you're seeker or skeptic. What do you mean by, I mean, are there people that come in, they're like, I don't know about the skeptic in terms of religion, or about your church in particular?
About any of it, because everybody's right. In all kinds of places, right? Either you're kind of like, we get a lot of folks who are like, I don't know how I feel about this God thing, but y'all seem nice, and I feel like
right.
I need to spend some time with people. And then we get some people who are feeling pretty convinced about the God thing, but they don't know about us, and so
right.
we're all working it out together.
Well, and I love that. And here's the thing, is that you all seem kind of nice is a great way to put it. Like, that's also, you know, a manifestation of God, I think. And for, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
the thing, is that like, here's an experience where everyone's coming together and feeling this connection. And it's so important, which is why you're doing for Mother's Day and for Father's Day. So I might call on Father's Day because I miss my dad all the time. This is really a lovely idea. How can people, one, volunteer, and then on Mother's Day, how can they participate?
Yeah, well, so for Mother's Day, we're mostly up on volunteers and we do a training. But if you're interested in Father's Day, that's not till June.
Great.
So for that, you actually can call the same number that you can call on Sunday to get in touch with somebody, which is our main line at the church, 312-268-5300. Or you can email us anytime at info@urbanvillagechurch.org, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're all over the internet world as well as the real world, and we always want to hear from you.
And tell us a little bit about the volunteers that you have that will be answering the phone.
Well, this Sunday, it's really ranging from Marcia Fall, that woman who invented it in the first place last
right.
year. One of our fellow pastors' moms is going to be one of the volunteers. There's a couple members of the church who are going to be volunteers. All people who we knew personally, who we knew had shown that kind of love to people in our community and to people in their lives, and were willing to do it on Sunday too.
Oh, that's so very cool. And do you have a website for your church in case people want to visit one of your locations? I know
yeah,
your four sites.
UrbanVillageChurch.org. And you can find times and places for all of those sites.
Wonderful. Hey, Hannah, it was wonderful to meet you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. And like I said, if you need a volunteer, if you don't have room this year, I want to do it next year.
All right. Well, I'm going to get in touch with you. I'm going to hold you to that. But thank you for all you do,
please.
Patty, and thank you for the mom that you are in the world.
Oh, no. This is a really wonderful thing that you're doing for so many people, not just on Mother's Day and Father's Day, but all year long. Have a great night. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase studio in Springfield, Illinois. I am in the basement of our state capitol back home on Michigan Avenue in our Allstate Showcase studio. Michigan Avenue is our producer, Michael Heidemann, behind the glass, also answering your phone calls, running the show. Adam Phillips, our engineer tonight, Esmeralda Leon, doing your traffic for you. And in the hallway, in the basement of the state capitol, is Senator Tom Cullerton. Senator, I've been trying to explain for now what is going on. I know everyone says 2 years, but it feels like 3 years because this is the third session I've been to. You guys start session in January, and you go through what your deadline for this year is. What's the date?
So the deadline every year is May 31st.
Okay.
You truly picked an incredible time to start coming down here. I've got to give you a lot of credit because, you know, there have been people who've been down here for a lot of years and seen a lot of things, but you have seen is something that, and I literally got reelected to my second term this past November. So for me, it's kind of an anomaly as well. But you have come down in apparently monumental times. Nobody's ever seen 3 years without a budget. Nobody's ever seen a governor who doesn't negotiate with people. You know, a lot of people blame a lot of different people, but we've had Republican leadership, we've had Democrat leadership, we've had a lot of leadership, and we've had a lot of budgets. So you have actually come down at, I got to say, just about the right time, Patty. Congratulations.
Is it the right time? You mean, and you're being sarcastic, because it's absolutely the worst time. But what sent me down here...
From a reporter standpoint, and from somebody who reports on news, you are at truly a tipping point for sure.
Well, and the tipping point is, and that's why. The reason I started coming down here was I saw people start to suffer immediately. In the first few months of Governor Rauner's administration, the people who at the very beginning started to receive letters that they would no longer be able to get services for their elderly parents, for their children with disabilities. I have a friend whose daughter is in a wheelchair, and she's profoundly disabled. And since the time that I started coming down here, she went from being able to have a job, being able to have her daughter live at home with her because she had help. Her daughter now lives in a group home. She's gone down to part-time work so she can also go visit her daughter so she spends more time with her. I mean, that's one woman who is just one example of the people who will never hear the thousands of stories of people who have suffered, people who have died, really, in the last 2 years during this impasse when, you know, social service agencies have stopped being paid. They've had to lay people off. They've closed their doors. And when I first came down here, Representative Sullivan said to me, well, these are tough times. Everyone's going to pay. And I have not seen that to be the case.
Well, the poor are paying. The weak are paying. Middle class is paying. You know, the super rich, they're not paying. They're fine. Nothing has occurred to them. The governor, his friends, none of their family members have suffered because of the budget impasse. None of them have lost an oxygen tank. Like, we had a woman down in southern Illinois who's an actual state employee, but because the state hasn't paid the health insurance fees to the providers, literally the sheriff showed up to take the oxygen tank from her son.
Oh, no.
And we had, you know, state legislators step in and say, hey, we'll help provide something. But that's not happening to a certain subset of this, of Illinois.
Right.
And so when you talk to them about what's going on, in their mind, they call it short-term pain. But I'm a blue-collar guy. I worked for Hostess, selling Twinkies and cupcakes. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a a doctor. I'm not, you know, somebody who was ultra rich making all this money. I'm a blue collar person. I see this in my district with my friends. I see this with people I deal with on a daily basis. This is real pain for some people. And to just make the comment that, well, short-term pain to make sure job creators survive and get through, it's just really not a good way to justify anything.
And you spoke today on some legislation, and I haven't been able to really talk too much on the show about the things I've seen over the last couple of days. There was a committee hearing yesterday for House Bill 40, which Representative Feigenholz has been is the sponsor of, and that has to do with, you know, if and when, and I believe that Roe v. Wade will be overturned if the Supreme Court justices are, if there's another justice appointed under President Trump. And that's a lot of people who are worried, because in the state of Illinois, if that happens, abortion becomes automatically illegal, as do certain forms of birth control, including the IUD, just based on the idea of conception. Now, during that committee hearing yesterday, Senator Ryder alluded, he actually cited the American Pediatric College, and he said that they have determined that life begins at conception. And that actually is, he's citing a thesis that is was a study of mice cells. And when they were able to study those little cells and determine that life starts at the conception, these zygotes with mice. So I'm not quite sure if Senator Ryder also thinks that we should not have mouse traps. I'm not really sure what he was alluding to as far as that goes, because that thesis also talks about personhood, and that's something totally different. But today, so yesterday he said that, you know, life begins at mice cells at the beginning. But he also then said today that people who care for our most disabled do not deserve a survivable wage. And he told you, in particular, you had just spoken about how crucial it is to help people so that we're not just locking them off and just shoving them into rooms and locking them up and let's see what happens. You know, there are actual lives at stake. And he told you to get over yourself.
Right. So Senator Ryder wants to, I get the whole pro-choice, pro-life debate is very passionate for a lot of people. And I'm not going to, you know,
re-argue that
stance.
Sure.
And that's where he is. I am a pro-choice advocate. I have always been that way, and I will continue to be that way. He is pro-life advocate. That is how he is. But at the same time, to say that everything needs to be cared for, and no matter what we do, we have to do everything and spend every dollar to care for and keep every
cell, every mouse cell, right.
Every single cell has to be cared for, and we have to do it. And at the same time, when you say, well, we need to fund taking care of our disabled, to say, well, we just don't have the money, we can't do it, it sounds a little hypocritical if you ask me. I mean, that's just me. Maybe other people feel different. But to me, to say everything needs to be cared for, and that's why I'm pro-life, and then when I come up with the argument of saying, you know, well, then great. Let's make sure that our disabled have all the care they need, and say, oh, well, you're just promising pipe dreams. And the argument coming back to me is, you're promising pipe dreams. You know, we can't do it, so you're really out of touch. So
Right. You
have to set your priorities, and you have to set what's an actual basis in reality of what your priorities are. What is your investment in people? Government is not an investment in raising money. Government is not an investment in growing dollars. Government is an investment of people, people being the taxpayers who pay for services.
Right.
So if we're going to invest in people, then you need to be on that side. If you're going to invest only solely in dollars, well, then I don't know how you make the other arguments you make all the time as well.
I agree, and I've been struggling with this, and this is so. That's why I was teasing you about the hallways of our Capitol. I know that we're down the street from the old state Capitol, where President Lincoln, you know, served in the 1830s or maybe it was 1840s. But the things that he struggled with when it came to slavery is so far removed, we believe, from what we're experiencing now. Only really, what is it of the role of government when it comes to how we treat each other? And President Lincoln believed so firmly that slavery should not exist. whatever his other, people can argue about his beliefs on race and how that evolved, but he really believed that one thing. And I am coming to this point where I, you know, all these fights, not just on our state level, but also on our federal level, when we talk about healthcare and whether or not healthcare is a right and all the thing, but yet all the things we do expect from the government, whether it's education or for first responders, when we pick up that phone and we call 911, we expect someone to show up. And yet we don't expect, you know, we say, well, you know, that's for someone else to care about. What if when you dialed 911, they said, oh, well, it doesn't seem like, you know, you're not, we don't have the funds for that right now. For your district.
Patty, what if when you called 911, they asked you for a credit card number?
Right.
What would you do if somebody was breaking into your house and the police, literally you called 911 and they said, great, what card do you want to put this on? Before they sent somebody to your house.
Right.
When you think about that, when you think about, oh, my house is on fire, my children are upstairs, and they go, yeah, we take Discover. Do you have Discover?
Mm-hmm.
How horrible would that be if we based our government and the fact we are a human, we have a piece of humanity to take care of each other and maintain each other. And the fact that we would say, well, let's just break it down to a dollar figure of what people are worth.
Right.
And that is where I get very disturbed in a lot of these arguments. It's how do you break down what people are actually worth per dollar? And that, to me, is not what humanity is about. And that's not what government is about. Government is about making sure we're all in this together and we're all taking care of each other. Can we be more efficient? Of course. Can we do it at a better deal? Of course. But then let's find that. But to break it out and finitely choose who is worth what dollar is a problem to me.
And that's what it comes down to. That's why I keep coming down to Springfield, is I think that the people of Illinois are not dollar signs. The state is not a business. We're not trying to run it at a profit. We are trying to take care of each other. And that's why I keep showing up. And I thank you so much for showing up on our show. I promise at some point I'll have you back in the Allstate Showcase studio. I know that it was so much fun having you on. Were you on with Senator Connolly?
I enjoyed it. You brought on my counterpart, a Republican senator, and he and I actually are working on a bill together. For pediatric autoimmune neurological disorder associated with strep, but we can deal with that in our next time together. But I'd love to have him on because we worked on this in a bipartisan fashion, and it looks like it's going to pass. It's going to be signed by the governor, and it's going to help our children in this state.
Oh, congratulations on that. And I like to think that our show had a little bit of help with that, getting you guys together.
If it wasn't for your show, we would never have known each other.
Come on, that's not true. Although, I mean, I'm often surprised at how many, I mean, you know, there are a lot of, look, there are how many senators? 59 senators?
59.
And there are 118 reps.
118 representatives.
It's not that big of a group of people, but there still seem to be some of you don't know each other. So we'll keep getting you guys together on our show.
I got to tell you, Patty, anytime you want me on the show with any legislator, I'll be more than happy. I have pride myself on coming from DuPage County. My district is mostly Republican, but I try so hard to always work with people across the aisle.
Well, and you do a great job. We appreciate you taking some time tonight. What do you have planned for the rest of the evening? Get some rest. Go fix the state.
Go to bed. Tomorrow morning I have agriculture committee at 8:15 a.m.
I will not see you at that meeting. Have a great night.
You sure? I mean, it's agriculture committee. We could be talking about some important things to you.
Hey, I've worked with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board, some great friends, obviously we have so much such a strong farming history here, and commodities are so reliant on the, you know, our ability to produce all of the great products in the state. I won't be there.
Just so you know, Patty, 24% yes. of our economy is based in agriculture.
Wow.
Largest single piece of our economy is agriculture and the impact it has on the state of Illinois. Almost just over 24% of our economy is based somehow in agriculture.
All right, fine. I'll try to make the meeting. Have a great night, sir.
I'm gonna make you come and join me with the farm bureaus.
All right. I can do that. We'll see. More after this on 720 WGN. We have that was a great conversation with Senator Tom Cullerton. And there are, by the way, we need to start taking some texts and phone calls from folks who want us to reach out to their legislators. We are not, sometimes I feel like I've only talked to the same people over and over again, but it does come down to availability. Obviously, we're on so very late, and there are a lot of legislators who would like to be on the show. And I want to make sure that we are reaching out to our listeners, representatives, to your legislators. And we can always pre-record, Mike. Don't you think we should probably make sure that we are hitting everybody? Anyone who requests a legislator.
Absolutely.
We will let the legislator know that you want to hear from them on our show. And if we can't get them live, we can always pre-record that. I think that's what we should do next.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I also need to do make sure that people know about our unofficial field trip to Springfield. It's really like you decide to come to Springfield. Let me know that you're coming down here. I'll be down here every week until the deadline of the session for the budget, which is May 31st. And I will show you at least around the state capitol. I want to go to the presidential library again. So if anybody wants to go there, I'll go hang out with you there. Have you been there, Michael, to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library?
I never had, but I had my brother went to school down in Lincoln, and we used to go to Springfield all the time, and we used to see, like, the Lincoln, you know, the place that he grew up in, the cabin, and all that stuff.
New Salem, yeah.
Wow, there is so much history in that part of town.
It is, you know what I was thinking today, and I should take a picture of all the landmarks at some point. It's, being in Springfield is like being inside a history book. Because there is a landmark just about every 5 feet, you know, where he had a law office, where he was, you know, had some lodgings, whether he was staying in a boarding house. Obviously, his home is here, where he served in the legislature, in the Capitol. There's, Esmeralda, have you had a chance to be down here?
I've never been.
I'm going to keep making that noise.
I know.
Okay, that's it. If I can't get everybody else to come down to Springfield, I should at least be able to get my show down here.
I told you, let me know so I can
I know.
Request
but how
off.
Do we, okay, if you want, every week for the next 3 weeks, do you want to come down with me like the 22nd?
Not every week. What?
No, I mean the week of the 22nd or the week of the 29th.
So let me check.
All right, then. When is Memorial Day? Is that the 29th?
I think that is the 29th.
All right.
I mean, it would probably be epic down there, right?
No.
No?
I mean, it would be epic if.
I guess everyone leaves.
Are you taking that day off?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I'm at night, so it's,
I know. Everything's
in the day.
That's what I was telling. I was telling our boss Stephanie. She asked me if I was taking Memorial Day off, and I was like, everything happens during the day, and then. And by the way, the fan van will be rolling in the Norwood Park Memorial Day parade. So I'm very excited about that. Do you want to ride in the parade with me?
Well, no, because I'll be working.
Oh, that's right.
Because I'll be working
during
the
day.
Well, I need to sleep.
I know it's 10 a.m. That's fair. I think it's noon. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up. But last year, my mom rolled with me in the parade, and she was throwing candy at people. And when I say that she was throwing candy at people, I mean she was throwing candy at people. It was
whipping it?
Yeah. She's got a good arm. She wanted to make sure that the kids weren't running into the street. So
yeah, I always wonder.
Right?
How far do you have to throw it?
You got to throw it. Yeah. Don't make the kids run into the street. My mom, you know, very conscientious of the kids, was pelting them with it.
Maybe tell her to throw it up high.
Right.
Land.
Oh, that's a good idea. I think you've got a great idea. Michael, do you want to roll in the fan van with me? Oh, no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Because poor Adam Phillips, our engineer, for 2 years, I think, he has had to roll the fan van through the Pride Parade. With me standing on top of it, and he's pretty sure he's going to kill me. And it won't be his fault. It'll be entirely my fault for standing up there.
He's a very intense insurance plan for that, so don't you worry.
Yeah. I want the same platform that the Tommy Hawk has. That's where I got the idea. Tommy Hawk was up on top of their van,
mm-hmm.
dancing and stuff, but he also had a carpeted like traction track sort of thing going on.
Yeah, we got to like strap you down or something like that. Maybe get the ropes or something.
Oh, oh!
About like a plank.
Yeah, like a plank, but like with a balcony, like with like a you know like oh yes, like with a railing is what I mean, right?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, let's work on that during the break. Okay. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio South. I am in Springfield, Illinois. And I'm in the basement of our Capitol, actually. Joining us in studio is comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire. How are you doing tonight, Paul?
I am swell. Thanks for having me again, Patty.
Swell.
Yeah.
I wanted you to come back in tonight because I get the feeling that you probably have some pretty strong thoughts about what's going on nationally. Before we do that, do you mind if I just got some text. Michael sent me the text from listeners who were listening to our conversation with Senator Daniel Biss and Senator Tom Cullerton. Yeah. Paul, you and Esmeralda, Michael, the whole show needs to come down to Springfield. And I don't know how we make that happen, but I think that we do. You and I have talked a little bit about this. Have you been to Springfield?
I have, just for like legal stuff. I've never been to the Capitol.
What kind of legal things have brought you to Springfield?
I had a case there once, actually, that I was involved in, and I had to go to court for.
Was it like in the Supreme Court? Or
No.
Illinois?
Oh. It was just a federal court area.
Okay.
So.
Well, interesting.
It was a very good case.
Well, some of these questions have to do, and I understand this from the 630, how do we get out of trouble by just passing a budget? And that's an important question, I think. And I'm sorry that I didn't get to it while we still had our legislators on the line, but really this is the same thing nationally, and there have been, what is it called, Paul, when they continue to operate the government even though they don't have a budget fully passed or approved? I can't remember. There's like a contingency plan sort of a thing.
In Illinois?
No, nationally. We also don't have a budget nationally. I think that they went for many years without officially passing a budget.
They have a temporary budget right now.
Temporary, right. So the budget is what we are spending money on. And without approving that, and without a court order, the state doesn't spend money on the things that we're supposed to. And then obviously the things that keep the state operating have to be funded. But these are all all the different things, whether it's education, and obviously we're running into problems in Chicago and other parts of the state. So that's one of the questions. Also, I think people say if we don't fix things, that are wrong, what difference does it make? Somebody asked about can the governor be impeached for not doing his job? Why don't the Democrats do that? And I think that's an excellent question, again, from the 630. I will ask our legislators tomorrow. I will ask the very thing, because my guess is this isn't enough. And my other, I would assume it's also because there keeps the promise of being able to move forward continues to be kind of strung out. You know, the governor and both sides of the General Assembly keep meeting, and it seems as though they'll come to a compromise. They keep working on things, and so it stretches out. And that's the only answer I can really give from this vantage point. So, by the way, Paul, I don't know if you heard our conversation earlier. There's a church that will be providing a wonderful event on Mother's Day, where if you don't have a mother to say Happy Mother's Day to, there are volunteers who will have conversations on Mother's Day, and there will be some dads on Father's Day. Whether you've lost somebody or maybe you're estranged from a parent and you see everybody else celebrating, it's kind of a wonderful thing to have some support that way. Paul, if you need to call me, I will not judge you on being single still. I won't. So you can call me and I'll be like, no, you find someone that's right for you. And if you never get married, that's entirely okay as well.
How about you just call my mom and tell her that on my behalf and just say that I'm normal?
No. I'm here for you, Paul.
Okay.
I don't know your mom.
Well, that would be a favor for me, but that's fine. Whatever.
Okay. Well, if you
need
a favor.
I see where the limits are.
Oh, you know, I mean, maybe further down in our relationship as friends.
Okay.
I'll do that for you.
Okay. Makes sense.
So another text that we got from the 708, update on an ongoing news story, President Trump has wet the bed for the third straight day. So I don't know. Okay. Where were you when you found out about FBI Director James Comey being fired?
I was in mid-conversation with somebody, and I was like, wow, I can't believe that happened.
Do you think that you found out before he did?
It's possible,
because
he found out by watching television while he was in California.
Yes, he was at one of their field offices in California, and some of the other agents saw it happening, and they all thought it was a joke. Like,
he thought it was a joke himself.
Oh man,
that's the word according to multiple news organizations.
Well, this is the first time it's gone down like this. He had one of his bodyguards, they constructed the letter and delivered it to an empty office. And we heard from a listener last night who talked about working for a big company and, you know, these kinds of things happen. You have to make decisions mm-hmm. quickly. I would argue that this is different. This is a matter of national security because not just because he was in transit, right? So now we have somebody who is formerly the head of one of our biggest law enforcement agencies in the country, if not the biggest law enforcement agency in the country, who finds out he's been fired. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a security problem right there. But I also think that it's a morale problem for other agents in the FBI who have worked with him. Here's the thing. He seems to have been a highly regarded leader.
There's two things you said there, where you said people said these things happen. According to the White House, this was under consideration from day one. So it's not like they didn't make a rash decision to do this that yesterday. It was a decision that was being considered. And the right thing to do, I guess, is to do it in person not embarrass him because he has a long-standing history with the FBI. But that being said, I've been watching all the news channels about the different reactions on this. So I definitely am curious if there are listeners out there to hear the other side of the story, because the compelling issue, the compelling arguments that the right can say are, and honestly, it's truthful, that he would have been fired if Hillary won. That's no doubt about it.
Do you think he would have been fired if yes. Hillary had won because of that press conference last year when he's, I don't know.
I think he would have been fired immediately. That would have been one of the first things Hillary Clinton did. You can't argue with that.
Do you think that President Obama did not fire him because he was investigating Hillary? I mean, why wouldn't President Obama fire him then if it was strictly, I don't like what this guy is doing, or he's not doing a good job, or he should not have said that at the press conference?
It would have been a political storm if he did that after he had lost the election.
And what's happening now? A political storm.
Well, yeah, but here's the issue that the argument that he did that Donald Trump did this because of the botching of Hillary's
investigation
is ridiculous, and nobody should believe that. That's an argument that's easily dismissed because he was selling shirts at his campaigns that said "Lock her up." So he was not going.
He was
to
a fan of Comey's during his campaign.
At different times, yeah.
Yes.
At sometimes he didn't, and then he called him a hero for doing things that weren't popular. So he went back and forth on that issue. But that is, there's no one that should really believe that. Now, the argument that this is related to Russia is what is, nobody can deny that it's related. I don't think you can deny that. The question that remains, that the argument that's being thrown out there is that this doesn't mean the investigation will stop. That's what the argument as to why there isn't an uproar on the right. And there's no proof that that's accurate. It doesn't. There's no proof that there are people that are going to continue the investigation. In fact, his letter today kind of implied that he hopes that the people of the FBI continue to look out for the people. So, you know, that might be a veiled attempt at saying don't stop the investigation. But
that was a statement from President Trump or
from Comey.
Comey.
Yeah,
yes.
He had a farewell statement to the people of the FBI.
Right. And I think that, I mean, FBI agents have their task. I mean, they're outside of the political sphere.
Correct.
I was listening to John Williams' show in the afternoon. He was talking to a former FBI agent who had served for 27 years. And he was talking about how, you know, people have investigated, you know, look, they found evidence against a Democrat governor in the state of Illinois and a Republican governor in the state of Illinois.
It's 100% supposed to be not political. And in fact, there's arguments that have been made in the past that the FBI and CIA do have agendas against certain politicians, including the Clintons. So there's no argument that this is politically driven. If it is, it wouldn't be in favor of any Democrats, because it just makes no sense.
Have you ever heard a president so obsessed with leaks?
Richard Nixon was obsessed with leaks and similar situations, but he was also paranoid.
Interesting.
And speaking of him, you know, that he's also the one that fired the special prosecutor, which a lot of people are comparing this to.
Let's talk when we come back about the, well, we want to talk about Assistant Attorney General Rosenstein mm-hmm. and Sessions, obviously. I want to talk a little bit about that and the idea of a special prosecutor. When we come back, we're hanging out with comedian Paul Farvar Esquire, our legal expert, and we invite you to call us and tell us, you know, again, you know, clearly we are dumbfounded. And we can talk a little bit, too, about how, well, if you supported Hillary, you should really be excited that Comey was fired. It really doesn't – I think the timing of this is what's so startling because of the investigation, because FBI Director Comey requested additional funding for the investigation last week. And so there are a lot of different things. There are also over 30 people officials who are in fact talking, and that's 30 people are talking about how irrational this president is being. So that's coming from inside the circle. So outside of the circle, I know there are a lot of people who are like, this was great, he should have fired Comey, I don't know why people are so upset, why aren't you supporting this? We want to hear from you. And I know we heard from Pumpkin last night. Got it. 312-981-7200. Again, walk us through your side of why this was a good idea, why you don't think it's a big deal, because we obviously think this is significant. More after this. By the way, 312-981-7200. We'll be back in just a moment on 720 WGN. Fresh. You're listening pretty late. We only have a couple minutes here because we have to take another break. You and I, Paul, we were talking too much about this very bizarre situation we find ourselves in as a country, as Americans. I know there are people who think, you should be able to fire whoever he wants. The director of the FBI has a 10-year appointment so that they can be excluded from any sort of political drama. That's mm-hmm. that's the bottom line, right? I mean, as you mentioned, President Obama did not fire him because it would have been a political uproar. Because he couldn't, it was very strange when he made those statements in his press conference last year saying that there was nothing they could prosecute Hillary. There was nothing they felt they could prosecute her on, they would be successful on.
Right.
But that she had used bad judgment. Right. And that's, you know, that was just weird. And then, you know, weeks before the election, he said that there were emails in this I can't remember her last name. I apologize. And it's unfortunate that I can never, I only can remember her.
Huma Aberdeen?
Yes, thank you. And her husband, Andrew Weiner, that she had sent. Anthony. See, I don't know any of their names.
That's fine.
But anyway, so that, and it comes down to that investigation that was so bizarre when it happened during the election and the testimony that FBI director gave last week. We'll talk more about that. We take a break here. But again, 312-981-7200. We will continue our conversation in just a moment on 720 WGN. Yeah, you're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting from our Allstate Showcase Studios South. I am in Springfield, Illinois, specifically in the basement of our state capitol. In the studio, in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, comedian Paul Farvar Esquire, our legal expert, joins us. You started coming in, legal. Well, I mean, I think that there is practicing law, studying law.
Yeah, I would say that.
I would say you're our
the
legal
Esquire
expert.
Stands for legal, so I'll take that as a plug.
As a plug?
Yeah.
As a plug for your expertise?
Usually I don't provide my legal expertise after 5:30, 6 p.m., but in this case, I think it's justified.
Fair enough.
How's that?
I think that's fantastic, and we appreciate your input on matters. And it is, you know, studying the law, understanding the Constitution. I know that there isn't anything we can, you know, refer to the Constitution in regards to the FBI director and what mm-hmm. the president's obligations are, what he can and can't do. Where are those things written, the rules, as far as that goes?
The rules for firing. Yes. I mean, he has executive powers. He can do what he wants.
Right.
The question lies in the people that are hired. And the checks and balances will come when the next person is suggested. And Rod Rosenstein already said that Sessions has to or should recuse himself from that process. And this guy, Rod Rosenstein, is actually the definition of apolitical. He was a Bush appointee, and Obama kept him because he's like one of the longest serving attorney generals and one of the most respected.
Well, and that's the thing here, too, is that people are talking about how, you know, he wrote this up. However, in an article that was published tonight in the Washington Post, it turns out that he told, these are from 30 people within the circle, in Donald Trump's circle, mm-hmm. that President Trump told Sessions and Rosenstein to come up with a reason why he could fire Comey.
Right.
I mean, that's...
And if you read the reasoning, he doesn't say to fire him. He just says that the handling of the Clinton emails was inappropriate and, somewhat crossing the lines, if you will. But to say that Trump cares about that is a stretch. So if that was the only reason...
So that's what kind of stuck in my ears earlier, where, you know, the who's the woman that's now speaking instead of Spicer? Because Spicer was in the bushes last night.
Huckabee.
Huckabee's. I really need to find out people's names. It's important when we're having these conversations.
I just know it's Mike Huckabee's daughter. That's why, right. I remember the name. And
so the press conference today, she said that he had committed atrocities.
Correct.
Let me look up the word atrocities, just so I'm because I have an idea
like
of what
chemical
I think.
Weapons, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I
mean. It's the
an
way
extremely
that
wait here it is an extremely wicked or cruel act, typically one involving physical violence or injury. But they said it was because he had misrepresented himself in the hearings last week. I'm trying to find out where that's an atrocity.
It's political no matter how you look at it. But nobody can argue that nobody with a straight face can say that Rod Rosenstein's memo regarding the Hillary emails at all influenced his decision. I mean, that was one of his campaign arguments was the Hillary emails. Why would he care all of a sudden? Or why would anyone who voted for him all of a sudden care that Comey mishandled and overshot that issue after his testimony on Wednesday?
Well, if anything, wouldn't they prefer that
Correct.
He overshoots?
Yes. So that's not an atrocity. If anything, it's political impropriety. But why would he care? It benefited him.
Yeah, it benefits I would imagine, if it's about how the election turned out,
right.
saying that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of emails that Humey forwarded to Anthony.
Aberdeen, yep, to Anthony Weiner.
That was, instead, it was actually a handful. They weren't actually classified until after the fact. That seems to be the exaggeration benefits the Trump administration,
right.
and his victory at the election.
Right. Okay. So to use those memos as a prop is just, it just makes you look like, wait, there's something else going on here. And the way that it's handled makes it suspicious that people are going to expect the worst. Now, people on the other side could argue, the possible arguments you can make for the defense of his actions are, he was going to be fired anyway. And, you know, look, he became political. Let's get rid of him. Fine. That doesn't explain the timeline as to why he did it all of a sudden, especially right after Comey asked for additional funds to do the investigation on the ties and the Russian involvement in the election. The second argument that also has arguments we talked about was obviously people saying, hey, it's going to still go on. He just lost the confidence of the FBI because he became political. Fine. That makes sense. If that happens, so be it. The other issue that people are also saying are, who cares? Why is this a big deal? Why does it matter? Weren't we trying to become friends with Russia anyway?
Well, I'm just saying that's the reset button.
Hillary was trying to reset it when she was Secretary of State, and now Trump has created a tie with a country. So those are the possible explanations, and to the extent that maybe there was some ties to the Trump campaign, maybe the argument is that Trump wasn't aware of them. You know, that lets him off the hook. Then if that's the case, why would you fire the guy who's investigating you? That is where it lies down. And I think that the Republican senators that are, covering up, for lack of a better word, need to respond to that.
And that's the thing, is the worry that I have is that firing FBI Director James Comey is a cover up for something even bigger.
Right.
That's my biggest concern. And okay, so now this leads us to a special prosecutor. Is there a will? I mean, who is in charge of assigning or appointing a special prosecutor in this case?
The Senate would have to decide on that. I don't think Sessions is going to ask
no.
for it. Charles Schumer has asked that there be a special prosecutor assigned. And Mitch McConnell, it seemed today, for all intents and purposes, that he's going to deny that request. Mm-hmm. There are a few Republican senators, however, that are concerned about the timing of this firing. And some of them have ties and respect for the FBI that maybe there will be a vote on it. Who knows? I don't think Mitch McConnell's going to allow it, but maybe with some public outcry, there will be. Or maybe something's going to come out in the next few weeks that will be leaked from the FBI that determines that, hey, Comey was getting close to something shady.
Now, the other thing that's come out tonight is that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein threatened to resign.
Correct.
Because he did not like being painted as the reason, the person behind the decision to fire FBI Director James Comey.
Right. And as an apolitical person, he is not really allowed to explain himself. Obviously, he can't come out and say, well, if you read the memo, I never said that. I was asked to write reasons to determine why Comey was not doing his job. Because it looks like, apparently from the press, whether you believe it or not, that Donald Trump had made up his mind and he approached Sessions and Rosenstein to do this.
Part of the reason why Rosenstein said that James Comey could be fired was for going public with information about Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server.
Right.
Rosenstein says that FBI Director Comey should never have gone public with Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server investigation.
Right. He makes no mention of the Russian anything.
Can I say that again?
Yeah.
The Deputy Attorney General wrote a memo under the direction of President Trump because he asked him for reasons to fire Comey. And he said the reason he should be fired is that he went public with Hillary Clinton's investigation.
He should be fired. He said that he
criticized him.
He was critical of his political actions in the statements he made about the ongoing investigation about Hillary Clinton during the election.
And what did many of the people at the convention last summer, what were they chanting again?
I believe they chanted many things.
One of them was based on the investigation. What was that again?
It was Free Willy. I heard that.
I heard a lot of Free Willy.
I heard there was talking about the Mike Tyson fight, I believe.
Yeah,
it was something
I think you're
else
talking
chanted.
About that. Yeah.
And then they also said lock her up, I think, is what you're trying
based
to say.
Based on Comey's investigation.
Yep. Yeah. But here's the thing.
So they're saying that he was wrong they wouldn't have even been able to chant that had he not gone public with it.
Well, they were already chanting it before but that was supporting. They were
yeah.
that was like
they felt emboldened.
in Bolden would be correct. And okay. I know how to use that word too.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to say I didn't have to look it up.
Also empowered. They felt empowered by
justified.
Ooh, that too.
But here's what the question I have, and I've had this conversation with people before. I think on Monday we had this conversation with someone I was texting with during our discussion about this. The issue that people that haven't explained to me legally are how they could have locked her up when there's no proof of intent. You know, even if she was grossly negligent in having this private server, what prosecutor would take that case knowing that they could never prove that there was an intent to, allow hackers to come into her server? I mean, there was no criminal conduct that I was aware of. And I could be wrong. But that's the one thing that, you know, civilly she was maybe grossly negligent, or you can make the argument. But to prosecute someone on that basis is, I don't believe there's ever been a precedent in that regard, especially when Secretary of States in the past have had similar private emails or personal emails that they went from. And I think it's been revealed since that Vice President Pence had his own private email that he was using, or his wife was still using.
Oh my God, I can't. My head's going to explode. Can we take a break here? I got to stop. I know we have a caller. Okay. It's so much. Esmeralda's right. It's a leak. It feels like a slow leak. My head is just oozing.
It's good to talk it out, because as soon as I start talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah. It makes you feel better.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. Well, we have a listener that wants to talk
to us. It's the end of the world
us.
As we know it.
And you know what? Dr. Lars Dingman's coming up, so maybe he can help us through all of this. Okay. More after this on 720 WGN. If you are listening pretty late, I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio South on Michigan Avenue on our Allstate Showcase Studio back home in Chicago. Comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire, our legal expert, and I know that this is so mind-boggling. We have a listener who wanted to join the conversation. Yes. Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
There's so much crazy everywhere. I don't know where to scoop anymore. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, this Romo thing, I really think that he got a raw deal. Obviously, everyone thinks he got a raw deal.
You mean James Comey, the FBI director?
Excuse me?
You mean James Comey did get a raw deal?
Yeah, Romo, yeah. Como, excuse me. Because I think he was as damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
As long as he was a tool for Trump, it was okay. But, I know I made that. Then he made that comment about Trump, and I'm thinking, well, that wasn't a smart thing to do. But they threw him under a bus. They really did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. Glenn, they threw him under the bus. They backed the bus up. He's basically become their speed bump right now.
Big speed bump.
Yeah.
You know, so now what's he going to do? So all he wants to do is just hire yes people? As soon as you say something negative about Trump, then
I think it's scarier than that. I think it's a little bit scarier than that, because the three people who have investigated him have been fired.
That's true.
Right. Well,
I mean, I don't know.
Why didn't he get rid of his press secretary? I mean,
for being a putz? For what?
Sean.
I know, but I don't know what reason.
Investigate him.
He's investigating him. Yeah. No, well, he doesn't mind. He doesn't mind putzes. Putzes are fine. I mean, look at Kellyanne Conway.
Makes him look better.
Yeah. No, they're perfect.
I was thinking of Sean.
Yeah, but he's a yes man. I mean, like he takes the heat. He does good ratings. I mean, it's hysterical to watch him. He's great on Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the guy's an idiot myself, but.
Which makes him a perfect guy to get out. Because here's the thing, Glenn, here's why. You have to have somebody who is willing to commit to the story, right? And James Comey, I think, you know, battled with this, with he has integrity. I believe he has integrity. Whether or not I appreciate it or even I thought it was wrong to have that press conference last year. I think that there are mistakes that he makes, but I don't know that he has ulterior motives. But Sean Spicer, Kellyanne Conway, these folks can commit to the whatever it is, the principle of that White House. And you know, he fires people who can't commit to that. I mean, you have to.
To be with Trump, you have to be committed.
Yeah. Yes. You got it, Glenn. You got it.
Pardon the pun.
I don't think you're far off the mark.
I think Cuomo was an honest man, and I think he was just too honest.
I don't know.
For his own good.
I don't know that we'll ever know. Well, look, we'll never know what's inside the hearts and minds of all these key players. But, Glenn, we really appreciate your time. You have a great night, okay?
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much. All right. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it is. It's mind-boggling. But does that make sense? You have to commit. I know that we – do we have I have something kind of fun. I think we needed to release some stress because we can go around and around in circles on this, and this will continue to unfold. I think it's time to have Dr. Dingman help us out, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Have you been here for Dr. Dingman before, Paul?
No. I'm looking forward to it.
Do we have Dr. Dingman yet?
Not yet. I think Dr. Dingman is going to be
calling in soon.
Yep, we have.
Can we come up with who should be the new FBI?
Do you have a what's your? I need to take a break here.
Can we have a contest to see people's best
FBI
best answers,
director?
Truthful, honest, or funny? Just to,
I think it's a good idea.
Release some tension, like you said.
I think we could do that. All right, who's your pitch us your candidate for the new director of the FBI. 312-981-7200. We'll also have Dr. Dingman coming up after the news. So I think that I almost feel like he needs to really just read the national landscape. I don't know if I want to take his expertise. I mean, yes, you know, individually he does a lot of wonderful work. So 312-981-7200. We have Dr. Dingman, our iTunes psychic, coming up after the news. If you'd like him to read you, your future, your present, what you should do next, he'll be coming up after the news in just a moment on 720 WGN. I think Dr. Dingman can. I don't know if he can read your mind. Dr. Dingman, that's not necessarily what you do, is it, sir? I wouldn't say reading people's minds is necessarily your skill set. It's more the vibration. Explain to me again how you can read people's past, present, and future.
The universe is alive and sentient, and when the...
Oh no! We're losing.
Communicating. Hello?
We're losing your vibration, sir.
That's horrible. Can you hear me now?
I can. Oh no! We're in a commercial. We're trapped in another universe. Continue.
What? This is a commercial or no?
No. This is us.
Oh, I'm saying the universe communicates with people through vibration, aka song titles, and I'm able to interpret what the universe is telling people based on their own lives and what they need to hear, and then I tell them. Although, if you remember, last week on your program, I predicted that James Comey would be gone. Remember I said...
I do.
With the alphabet, I said there's a G. The G would be gone. And I thought it was an actual alphabet thing.
Well, I thought you meant the government. I thought you meant, like, our government was on the... Paul, I mean... Dr. Lars Dingman has incredible insight, and I thought maybe you meant that the government was going to implode, which also is feeling a little bit like that, too.
Yes.
It's all relative.
A little bit. I think what it meant was that the G-Man would be gone, which, in fact, now I guess he is as of today, the head G-Man.
I wish we had some of former FBI director's songs so that we could read a little bit for him, or at least you could.
His three songs.
Oh, my God, that would be fantastic if I would know. I've several times called the White House and offered to give President Trump a reading based on his last three songs. But so far I have not gotten the response.
I heard Comey's last songs were Barry Manilow, Kesha, and Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, Girls Just Want to Have Fun or True Colors, do you think?
It was the deep cuts, actually.
Oh, I see.
Time after time.
Ooh.
And then Barry Manilow, I'm not sure. I know he celebrated his whole album series.
Toto Fuhrer is what we call it.
Yes. I know we have a listener on the line who would love to hear what you have to think about her. She would like a reading from you. I'm sorry. I don't have the caller's name. What's your name?
Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. You're on the line with Dr. Lars Dingman. Go ahead.
Hello, Sarah.
Okay.
What are your last, what are the last three songs that you randomly heard?
Okay. And no judgment, right?
None.
Well, little judgment.
Okay.
On
no,
my part.
Paul. Applause. Only applause,
applause
regardless.
Judgment,
yes.
Applause.
Yes.
Okay. So my choice, Talking Heads, This Must Be the Place.
Nice.
Excellent.
And then Back to Black, Amy Winehouse. And then,
yes.
And then Let It Go.
Yeah.
So Let It Go, Back to Black. And what was the other one?
This Must Be the Place.
This Must Be the Place, Back in Black, and Let It Go.
Mm-hmm.
You're upset. I'm sensing that you're upset about a loss of some kind, Sarah. Have you recently broken up with a romantic interest?
Yeah, not too upset, though.
You're not upset? Well, you broke up with this person. They didn't break up with you, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah. So you're back in the black. What I'm sensing is the relationship was costing you emotionally, perhaps financially as well. And that's why you broke up with this person. His name was Richard. What was the name?
I'm not even going to say that. But
it's the radio.
You know what?
Sarah.
Okay. Yeah. Joe. Well, Joe.
But that's not his real name, is it?
No, that really is. I hope he is not listening because this will be news to him, but whatever.
Oh, he doesn't know that you've broken up with him yet.
Well, he's going to know soon, so.
Oh, so you're telling us first. Well, I appreciate that, Sarah. It's always good to be the first to know.
Well, and also we're working through it together. I kind of like to think of it that way.
It takes a village, Patty.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. It does. It really does.
So what I'm sensing, Sarah, is that Joe was sapping you of your emotional strength, your physical strength. It was also costing you a lot of money. You were in the red, if you will. True, he was more of a drain than he was a positive influence in your life.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. So the song Back in Black, you're back in the black. I don't know if you're familiar with an accounting term, but, you know, if you're in the red, that means you're losing money. If you're in the black, it means you're making money. So Back in Black is a good harbinger that you're doing the right thing by breaking up with them. I also sense that there's someone else on the horizon. There's a new person that you have your eye on. That's a large reason of why you're breaking up with Joe. True or false?
Not yet. No. Hopefully soon.
Sarah, there's no one that you're aware of that you're attracted to.
Oh, I mean, there's tons of people that are attractive, but there's no person, I guess, that I have my eye on, so to speak. I just, Joe and I are married, and whoops.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope. Okay. But yeah, no. So it's bad relationship, and just looking forward to new things. So.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's what that one song was, Back in Black. And what were the other two?
This Must Be the Place, and then Let It Go.
Well, Let It Go. You don't have to be a psychic to figure that one out.
Exactly.
And This Must Be the Place.
Correct.
I think you've gotten to the place in your relationship, and we don't need to go into the whys and the reasoning behind it, but you've made an adult decision that the relationship is over, and this is the place that you're in. You've gotten to your breaking point, basically, and you're moving on. Although I sense you're not 100% comfortable or sure that this is the right thing to do at this moment. True or false?
False. More or less, I'm more uncomfortable that I chose to call.
Oh, no, don't be, no, no, no. We appreciate
it. No, don't be uncomfortable. There's no judgment. There's no uncomfortable. No. You know, don't be uncomfortable.
Two of those songs are really good songs.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, no, I think so too, except for that Let It Go is going to kill me. But no, it's just, this is a really weird decision to call in and ask about this and have you actually be right and a little Spenguly a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the beauty. It's not, first of all, Sarah, it's not me. This is the universe. I don't know if you're a religious person, but some people call the consciousness of the universe God or Vishnu or Buddha. Everyone has their own, you know, name for it. But I just call it the universe because it's pan-denominational, and it's alive, and we're all... the way I try and explain it is, think of the universe as a large oak tree, and each human being, actually, each being on the planet is a leaf. So you're your own leaf, but you're connected to the trunk of the tree. So you are affected and affected by what the universe does. And the reason that these songs pertain to you specifically is because the universe knows what you're going through far more than Patty or I do, and is giving you guidance and insight that perhaps you're not able to get on your own. This is the universe saying, well, you've come to this point, right? This is the place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're back in black and time to let it go. So perhaps this is the universe validating your decision. Or perhaps this is the universe saying, are you absolutely sure that this is a thoughtful decision on your part? And obviously, you're the only person that can answer that.
Sure. Well, thank you.
And Sarah, does it help to say it? I think, and I'm not sure how many people you've talked to, but I mean, for me, sometimes saying something out loud, putting it out there, also gives me some place, like a landing place for it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean... this is I know that that this is the right move for me and my kids, because it's just been a long time coming, and you know, an unhealthy relationship kind of you know, just not healthy, not good, and it right. just takes a lot of it takes years to just kind of get to the point where you're you know what's what, and then you're ready to walk away. So,
I agree.
Is this I'm sensing there's some. Is there a substance abuse issue here, or a physical issue here?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. Right. So this is the universe telling you that you're absolutely correct in making this brave choice. You know, you're a mother. You have children, and the easy choice. I'm not going to say easy, but the lazy choice, the less courageous choice would be to stay there and not make a big change. But you know in your heart that it is safer and better for your children for you to make this move. And this is the universe saying, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Sarah, you're absolutely right. And the other thing is being a mom is that you also, you know, you work so hard to do everything you can for your kids. You want them to feel like, you know, making every choice is the, you know, that you've put everything behind it. So, you know, as part of that is having picked their father. And that's something, it's not shame, but it's that idea of like, I don't want to say I made a mistake. You haven't made a mistake. You are doing the right thing now, Sarah, and that's the most important thing.
I appreciate that, because that's exactly how I felt. So
yes, no. Sure. And this yes, go ahead, Dr. Dingman.
You earlier said it's like a Svengoolie movement. It's really not. The reason you called, which this is out of character for you, you called because the universe urged you to call. You know, some people call it the subconscious. Some people call it, you know, your inner voice. Stevie Wonder called it Inner Visions, which was a fantastic album. I don't know if you have it, but if you want to listen to the music, that guy can play.
That's a great album. I'll agree with you.
It is a fantastic album.
As a music critic. But,
right. There you go. Inner Visions, Stevie Wonder. That voice, whatever you want to call it, you know what it is. the right thing to do. And now you have the courage to do it. And by getting you to call into this program, the universe is understanding that you are scared and trepidatious and might feel like you have failed because this relationship is going to end. But that is not the case. And that is probably the reason you were incentivized to call in this evening, to hear Patty's perspective and what the universe thinks about this, and to give you strength to do the right thing for your children, because you are not, certainly, as Patty said, you are not a failure to your children. You're a hero.
Yes.
And by making this difficult choice for yourself and your family, you are being a hero. And even though they may not understand all the pain and trouble that you're going through at this moment, as they get older, they will understand that you are their hero and that you rescued them, and they will appreciate it. Absolutely. So
and
I think
you have
you're
to,
doing the right thing.
And you have to rescue yourself to rescue them. Sarah, will you hold on the line? You absolutely have to. Can you hold on the line? My producer will take some information. I have something for you, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks
so much for calling, Sarah.
This is amazing, and I can't thank you enough, Sarah, but I applaud you more than anything else. We have to go to a break. More after this on 720 WGN.